this is an interview. I had reached out to the base, and I've gotten to know the commander, Andy Bowser, a little bit. Super guy. And then the chief warrant officer, Andy Sargent, super guy. My my wife actually teaches members of Andy's family, and I've known that family for quite a while. I said, let's do an update on the base. They said, well, he's actually booked. However, would you like to talk to the person who oversaw rescue efforts during the wildfires out west? And I said, yeah, I think that would be pretty darn cool. And we're happy to be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Craig Greeley, who joins us here. Great to see you, man. Yeah, thanks for doing the time.
Hey, my friend, thank you very much for everything. Really appreciate this opportunity.
First of all, eight air maintenance squadron.
100%, there you go.
Yeah. Is what you oversee. Tell us about that squadron at Canadian Forces Base Trenton.
Yeah, so 8 Aircraft Maintenance Squadron just got there in July timeframe of last year. We oversee what we call second line maintenance across the base. So primarily we're looking at some of the major periodic inspections across the C-130J fleets, the C-17 fleets, as well as we hold all the various back shops in support of those fleets. So when we talk about bashing metal, when we talk about avionics or electrical snags and the equipment associated with that, we take care of all that. And the biggest thing I would think is the our armament section that takes care of the explosive ordnance disposal, or EOD, across all of Southern Ontario. They've got a pretty large swath. We've got a group of about 10 people looking care of taking care of that.
Well, it's kind of a combination of physicality and high intellect, which is neither of the things I need to do what I do for a living. You grew up out on the Rock in Newfoundland. Tell us about what exposed you to the military and what got you interested in the first place.
That's a really good question. One I've gotten many times throughout my career, and ultimately it's before I joined up with the military, I graduated in 2000. I had the opportunity to do a job shadowing placement with Cougar Helicopters based out of St. John's, Newfoundland. And working with those folks, a lot of them were former military. And they were saying, like, Craig, like, the military life, it's great. If you want to go aviation, this is where you want to be. Some of the former pilots, search and rescue technicians themselves working on, at that point in time, they had Super Puma aircraft, or helicopters, I should say. And they were the ones that motivated me to ultimately join the military. So I went to RMC after that.
So RMC, so you were in Kingston.
Yep.
That brought you to Southern Ontario. Kingston is one of those cities that can get you in trouble because there's a great nightlife and there's a whole heck of a lot that goes on. But what is the discipline structure like when you're going through the military, and has it changed over time?
My experience, as you bring up the nightlife, I can honestly count on one hand, my mom would be proud of me, that I don't think I've spent more than 5 days or 5 occasions, if you will, at any of the bars in Kingston. Because for me, I had different goals, aspirations when I was going through RMC, and training for what was the Olympics at that point in time was really my biggest thing. So I was very disciplined towards that aspect of things. I needed to ensure I did my studies, did what I needed to do, so I could go and do that training that I wanted to afterwards.
Sorry, you just kind of threw in there slightly that you trained for the Olympics. What sport?
Track and field. Track and field, 100 and 200 meter.
100 and 200 meter in track and field. So what was the best time you ever ran?
10.03.
Oh,
10.03 for the 100 meter. That was some years ago now. Let's not go out on the road out here and try it now. But
10.03, that is incredible.
Yeah.
And so at the time, what was, and then what is it, like 19 seconds for the 200 meters?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so what, do you think that ability to be in that kind of shape made joining, was the training before RMC?
It was, yeah. So I was doing things in Newfoundland before I joined the military.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the fact is that for a lot of people, military training would kick your butt. You probably... Not that you didn't have any issues with it, but you probably did okay.
And that I was just going to say the exact same thing. You know, going in with that level of fitness, for myself anyway, made the training that the military was giving me that a little bit easier.
Right.
Right? You know, I'm not struggling as much, if you will, in doing some of the events and things that we would need to do. But obviously, I've got my my weaknesses when it comes to running long distances and things of that nature.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, how tall are you? 6'4", 6'5"?
6'6".
6'6". So, You're a big guy, and you end up going into the military, which says, do they when they have people come in and say, this guy is huge. We got to put him into a physical discipline. Do they try and guide you a certain place, or did you have your mind made up when you went in to RMC?
So I had my mind made up in terms of the job that I wanted to do as an aerospace engineer. But prior to becoming what we call an area officer, I was a airfield engineer. There was a mix up in my paperwork. So that gave me the opportunity to go down to Gagetown, New Brunswick, and do what we call Common Army Phase. And at that point in time, absolutely. They saw a tall guy coming in, and they're like, we're going to get you to do all the physical activity. So for my section, I was the C9 gunner. I had a light machine gun at that point in time. So I was that guy because I had that kind of stature.
That was my grandfather's job in World War II. He was a machine gunner.
Really?
Yeah, he entered at 17 and went into it. And I know that comparing 70 or 80 years apart is not an easy thing to do, but it's certainly a lot of admiration for doing that. What year would this have been around?
So for that training, that would have been in 2003.
We were in the middle of it.
100%
internationally.
We were. Absolutely.
What was expected of people coming in, and was that one of the reasons that you got involved, was because you wanted to serve and help support the military?
Yeah, so it's really interesting if you look at the timeline. So I joined in June of 2001, mm-hmm. September 11th, 2001.
Right.
So I remember my mom crying back home in Newfoundland, Craig, you're not going to war. Please tell me you're not going to war. But I'm going through the training system at that point in time. So the idea of going to Afghanistan eventually was not even something I considered. I've got years ahead of me before that even becomes something I considered, right? So my decision to join the military was predated those events, but has been my legacy, has been the thing ultimately that has been the most part of my career to date.
Lieutenant Colonel Craig Greeley joins us here on the Lauren Brooker Show. I wanted to ask you, September 11th, Newfoundland played a massive role in that in that day. Any connections that you can share that were part of that? Because, I mean, thousands of people ended up in Newfoundland.
100%. So at that point in time, I was in Saint-Jean sur Richelieu in Quebec. So far away from it, but seeing and hearing of the, not the documentary, but the musical Come From Away right now, it's near and dear to my heart. Brings goosebumps every time I see it.
How close were the planes that were landing? Did they come into St. John's, or did they go everywhere across the province?
I'm sure maybe one or two of them went into St. John's, but I think Gander, Newfoundland, was where the bulk of them went to.
It is incredible to see just when you go into a place like 8 Wing Trenton, there's people from every province and every territory right in our backyard. And it's also got a huge Francophone area. I mean, you have the schools, and for whatever reason, and maybe you know this, there's a lot of French people that join the military.
Absolutely.
Is there any reason to that? Is it because the training ground is there now? Or
I would like to believe that across all the provinces, all demographics, you know, we have representation, if you will, from all of Canadians.
Sure.
To say that there's more Francophones, or I couldn't necessarily speak to that.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's incredible to see the growth that you've in 20 years in the position that you're in. We want to dive into a little bit more about the work and what has been going on the last few weeks out west, and you overseeing the evacuations, and that will be a big bulk of the interview. What you do and the training that you guys have, you can't be, you couldn't be a radio host, let's say that. There's a lot of study, there's a lot of learning, 100%. And with the way things are changing every year with technology. What was your first posting?
My first was 2008 to 435 Squadron.
And that's Winnipeg?
That's Winnipeg, correct, yeah.
Okay, so Winnipeg and Trenton are both kind of in different ways. Is it Ottawa, Winnipeg, Trenton that are kind of the big three as far as the Air Force, or can you explain the different roles? Because I know we see Trenton here as the head, but they have kind of different pieces with that, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. So at that point in time in 2008, 435 Squadron was a search and rescue and air to refueling squadron. And along with that, we had 442 Squadron out of Comox, British Columbia, doing search and rescue. And they primarily looked after British Columbia. Winnipeg looked after Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, and Northern Canada. And 424 Squadron here at CFB Trenton, they looked after Ontario, Quebec. 413 Squadron out of Greenwood, Nova Scotia, they took care of the Maritimes, as well as 103 Squadron in Gander. So it was primarily a search and rescue platform that we had. We were supporting as well at that point in time Afghanistan. So we only had the legacy C-130s. you know, in that 2008, 2009 timeframe.
Around then, to transport stuff to Afghanistan, we used Antonovs, didn't we, as part of that?
I believe so, yeah. I think if you go back to the records, there was some damage that was done to the base as well.
Okay.
That predates me, but right. Good stories.
So the story that I heard was that the Antonov took off and took the fence out at either White's Road or...
Yeah, tried to take off.
And that it got turned back around, but they said that the Russian pilots went and got it fixed or whatever and landed it, but that is a massive plane, and that probably predates us getting the Globemasters, which are the biggest plane here.
Absolutely.
That was a game changer for the Air
100%.
Force.
100%. I mean, it is an incredible asset that we have. It's unfortunate that we only have 5 of them right now. We had 4. We bought a fifth one sort of 2015, 16, 17-ish timeframe. Yeah, but what a game changer it is for strategic airlift across Canada and overseas.
And it's probably nice that we don't have to use the Antonovs as much anymore.
That's a whole other conversation there.
We're going to dive into a whole bunch more in this interview. We're going to take our first time out here. We're talking to Lieutenant Colonel Craig Greeley, the commanding officer of 2 Air Maintenance Squadron. 8 Air?
8 Air.
8 Air. I don't know where the 2 comes from.
There's another 2 Air Movement Squadron at the base.
See?
Yeah.
That's why I couldn't fly a plane. We're going to take a break. The Lauren Brooker Show continues on CJBQ.
Live from Studio 800, it's the Lauren Brooker Show on CJBQ.
9:26 is the time here on the Lauren Brooker Show. Tim Durkin with Ted Bradford as we get set to chat with Matt Richardson in hour number 2. He battles cyber criminals and those that hurt children. Great hero, and we've got a great hero here in hour number 1. Lieutenant Colonel Craig Greeley is the commanding officer for the 8 Air Maintenance Squadron, but he's also the task force commander for Operation Lentus, which was, in short terms, the fires that Ken has been dealing with. He was in charge of those operations, so we're going to get to that in a minute or two here. You rise through the ranks. What were the different tasks over your career that have kind of been the real passion for you, the things that you did on a daily basis that made you love going to work?
There we go. First and foremost, working at the squadron.
Yeah.
My time at 435 Squadron, my Samuel, my senior aircraft maintenance engineering officer, my boss, if you will, Major Todd Murphy, former commanding officer as well of 8 AMS, just going to work and doing that level of work in support of direct operations and taskings. I mean, there's nothing more rewarding, which is why I had given the opportunity to go and be the commander for this Air Task Force, which is so rewarding to me. But beyond that, I've had some really key opportunities to work inside of 1 Canadian Air Division in Winnipeg, where I was the senior operations duty officer. Working inside of our combined air operations center. I'm spelling everything out because I don't know if I'm going to acronyms, I'm going to lose your listeners.
Yeah.
But that for me, working as the SOTO, as we called it, that was probably one of the best jobs I've had to date, working inside that operations center, kind of engage with operations or in training, if you will, if there was another sort of 9/11 event and how we, the Air Force, would react to that. And given that opportunity as an aerospace engineer, has never happened to date. I was the first person to be trained to do that. And it was just an incredible opportunity.
So to be able to do that, so does that mean that you have the qualifications to go into space, or is that a whole different? Is that the next level?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's of that generation of SpaceX and everything nowadays. Like, I'd love that opportunity to work in sort of that environment. Unfortunately for me, from a medical perspective, I had a stroke back in 2018. Which a heart attack predates that, which is kind of a result of me not going to the Olympics. And there's a whole nother story associated with that, right? But yeah, I'd love to be able to go into space. But yeah, medical is not on my side right now for that.
When did you get to 8 Wing?
Just last year.
So you come into Trenton. And I mean, one of the things we were just saying a minute or two ago, there's a couple dozen bases across Canada in all branches of the military. So you probably know somebody everywhere. What did you know about Trenton before getting posted here?
So it's always funny working at 435 Squadron, you know, like Trenton. You know, we're so much better at 435 Squadron in Winnipeg than what Trenton was, right?
Oh, okay.
But Trenton, if you will, they at 8 Air Maintenance Squadron going into Afghanistan, they were the organization that were choosing all the deployments from a maintainer's perspective, people fixing the aircraft. But when I left 435 Squadron in 2011, I went to Atlanta, Georgia, worked alongside of Lockheed Martin when they were producing the C-130Js. So my connection to CFB Trenton goes back to, you know, from the very start of my career. And ever since then, I've always been in support of Trenton in some way, shape, or form up until coming on to take over this commanding officer role last year.
Well, you didn't get much time until the last couple of weeks have really changed things. So just about a year. And this is kind of a, there's the civilian side of this is just fires. That's just part of the way the world works. Tell us about some background to the wildfires, because it was northern Manitoba.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I was the Air Task Force or ATF commander for what we call Operation Lentis 2502 and 2503. One of those was in northern Manitoba, in a place called Pocketawagon and Norway House. And then the second iteration was in Sandy Lake in northern Ontario, just north of Kenora.
So the fires start, and that's the thing about this country. There's just these thousands of kilometers of nothing but brush and trees. And as you go further up, fewer trees, but the dry conditions. How did those fires even start?
Which is really interesting. I didn't know this until recently myself, but lightning starts it. It's incredible to take a look at the weather network and see sort of how dry it is across the prairies in these northern locations, or even look at your own yellow grass on your front lawn. But lightning, even though it's raining, starts these fires, and then sometimes they just grow out of control, cut off key networks or key transportation routes to get into these northern communities, hence, which is sometimes why their evacuations are called upon.
It was interesting when I lived in Yellowknife, there was an evacuation plan. I think it was Joint Task Force North. It was called up there. They had plans that involved evacuate because everything was, if the electric went down in January, what do you do? That I didn't realize CFB Trenton was the group that would do the evacuation for the entire city of Yellowknife. And that made me really proud to be up there and be from this area. But Trenton has these massive roles. So the firefighters, they go in from across Canada. I know sometimes we go to Australia, they come here, US, Canada. When and why and how does the military become a part of a firefighting operation?
It's what we call the RFA, or the Request for Federal Assistance process. And what that means is that all the provinces are, if you will, on the hook to provide evacuation and support in these sort of situations. But sometimes the situation becomes so severe that it overwhelms the capability of the province. And so the province submits what we call an RFA, Request for Federal Assistance, where they ultimately ask the military to provide assistance to, whether it be evacuate during the wildfire seasons, flooding, support of filling sandbags, what we saw in Ottawa very recently. In this particular instance is exactly that. It was the evacuations, and Trenton being the home of air mobility. We have all those assets. We've got them on very quick standbys within a matter of hours, we were out the door on our way going up north to provide this capability.
Lieutenant Colonel Craig Greeley joins us here on the Lauren Brooker Show. He's the commanding officer for 8 Air Maintenance Squadron and also oversaw the operations with the wildfires in northern Manitoba and northern Ontario. Are you just working at work and you just get tapped on the shoulder and say, how do you want to go into hell on earth, or how does that all work?
So it's a bit of a interesting story. One of the other hats that I wear is as the Air Mobility Fleet SAMA, or Senior Aircraft Maintenance Authority. And what that means is that I help in the development of training for our technicians. I oversee the training for our young officers that are coming in as aerospace engineers. And I just happened to be in Winnipeg at that point in time. And as you often see, the Amber Alerts on your phones.
Yeah.
So I happened to be there in Winnipeg. It's a Wednesday night. I get this alert talking about the evacuations in northern Manitoba. And I send an email back to Colonel Bowser, the commander here. And I said, sir, I'm here in Winnipeg. My conference ends tomorrow on Thursday. If you need an ATF commander, I'm here. I'm here to help you out. He says, Craig, you know what? No, we got this. It's going to be small. We're going to send one aircraft and one person, that's all we're being asked to do. And within the next 24 hours, it grew to, Craig, oh my God, don't leave Winnipeg. Stay there now, right? Yeah. Go see these people. Yeah, it was incredible. Just right place, right time, if you will.
Tell me about the makeup, first of all, of Northern Manitoba as far as how these communities are accessed. We know that we see First Nations here in Tyendinega, where there's 18 different roads that enter these communities.
That's a good point.
It's a completely different world.
100%, vastly different. Once you get into these Nordic communities, I mean, if they've got road access, that's all they have. This other location to talk about, Sandy Lake, they have road access, but that's only during the winter when we talk about ice roads. Exactly, right? So they all typically have some sort of dirt airstrip that might be 3,000, 3,500 feet long. But that's probably it. So when in the situation like this, a wildfire comes through and it cuts off that road, they're stranded. And for what we saw in Pocketawagon, it became very, very serious, just given the geography and how close that fire was to the town.
So when you're on the plane heading up, do you start to get debriefs on the community and a little bit about it, or what is the process as you're heading up there?
Yeah, so in this particular instance, I happened to be there for the first iteration. The second one is exactly as you described, right? I'm getting calls, I'm getting emails prior to once I've been formally selected as the ATF commander, and I'm being read in on all the work that's being done up to this point. I should segue into this. Prior to me coming in, there's a group in Winnipeg at 1 Canadian Air Division who are, they support all the missions and all the tasks that we do throughout the world. So there's somebody there that was stood up to kind of get the ball rolling until I got selected, and then he hands over to me, and then I take it and continue on from there.
9:35 is the time here on the Lauren Brooker Show. We're continuing our conversation here about the wildfires out west and the man in charge of overseeing the rescue of many, many people. Lieutenant Colonel Craig Greeley joins us here on the Lauren Brooker Show. We'll take a break.
I think we need to talk. The Lauren Brooker Show on 800 CJBQ.
Is the time here on the Lauren Brooker Show. Tim Durk and Ted Bradford, 10 South Front Street in Belleville. Coming up hour number two, Matt Richardson is going to join us. He is an expert that fights cyber criminals. And it's going to be a cool to hear from a guy that is a hero. And we've got a hero here in hour number one, and that's Lieutenant Colonel Craig Greeley. He's the commanding officer of 8 Air Maintenance Squadron. I still can't do it. It's too many words.
8 AMS.
8 AMS. Oh, geez.
There you go.
Efficiency. Efficiency.
Acronyms.
Yeah, he was also in charge of Operation Lentus, which helped rescue people from northern Manitoba, northern Ontario. First of all, you fly above the fire. Like, how does the smoke, when you're thousands of feet in the air, are you above the smoke when you're at the top of your flight?
It really depends. To be honest, there's some locations, like you were seeing the smoke upwards of 8,000, 10,000 feet. But,
wow.
You know, when I came back from the first iteration of Lentus, you had made a comment here earlier that you could see the smoke down here in Ontario, right on the southern Ontario. Like, so it travels.
Yeah.
It goes high, but it travels far.
Yeah. Tell me about landing. Tell me about the communities in northern Manitoba and the role you and your women and men played.
It was, first and foremost, like it was incredible to be able to serve with so many people and people that I've never even met before. But now, like, we've shared this bond, as my chief would often say, like, I want more of this, but not more of this. Like, I love that opportunity to be able to come together towards a dedicated operation. But I don't want it to be at the result of Canadians being at risk, Canadians about to potentially lose their lives, lose their homes, lose their loved ones. I mean, I don't want that, but that opportunity was incredible.
So in these communities, are they surrounded by forest on all sides?
100%.
So how many people, see if I can get these right, Norway, House, Cross Lake, and Pocketawagon.
Pocketawagon, get you going.
Yeah. So there are hundreds of people in these communities, or a few
thousands?
A few thousand
people, which was probably the biggest challenge that we had while we were up there. It was determining how many people were actually there and how many did we need to evacuate.
So tell me this, do you have to go house to house and presume somebody's hiding or resisting to go? Or what is your role in making sure people are ready to leave?
So when you take a look at Puckett to Wagon, like we, the Canadian Armed Forces, we're not the only people there. We had people from Red Cross, Indigenous Services, RCMP, and primarily I'm looking at them to do what you just described, go around knocking door to door and say, hey, listen, like Air Canada, we've got a schedule of flights coming in. Do you want to evacuate or do you want to stay? But eventually got to the point where we didn't know how many people were left in Puckett to Wagon, that we had about 20 to 25 people from three PPCLI, an army regiment out of Shiloh, Manitoba.
Is that Princess Patricia's?
You got it. Okay. The one acronym I didn't spell out.
Oh, yeah. It's all good.
Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry.
And so you get down and land. How many people can fit in a plane?
It depends. So we had a number of different assets. The HERC... The HERC was not able to go into these locations, so we primarily utilized the Chinook helicopters, and we were getting about 60 people on each of those.
60 people?
Yeah.
I didn't realize they held that much weight.
Yeah, we call this thing Seats Plus, where basically just find a place on the aircraft.
Right.
Yeah. There's no seats. There's.
So if you saw me, it would be 56 people max type thing. Yeah,
or 53 if I was on with you, right?
So how far away are you taking people from this spot? Are the choppers going a couple of hours? Are they going 10 minutes away?
It was about an hour. So the concept of operations, I was primarily staged out of Winnipeg coordinating all the operation.
Right.
Well, I had a group of individuals from various units that were in the PAW in northern Manitoba. And then they, within their helicopters, as well as the Twin Otter fleet from 440 Squadron and Yellowknife as well, they were flying into Puckett to Wagon, picking up people. Very unique. The fixed-wing assets, the Twin Otter, was able to land on the airstrip. But for the helicopters, we were going into town, landing in soccer fields, landing in baseball fields, like anywhere we can put it down, bring people on to these and get them out.
And so I'm assuming there's people with Environment Canada that are advising you guys, or there's people within the government that are saying the winds are changing or there's rain coming.
100%.
What's the weather component and what's the communication like between civilian and military and EMS?
Outside of my own air operations center, within the province of Manitoba, there was an Army liaison officer who was doing that level of coordination, getting updates from them, feeding that and back into us. But obviously, within the Canadian military, we've got our own intelligence service that's able to feed us information as well. But it was very dynamic, especially when we talk about the second iteration of Lentus and why we went up to Sandy Lake, Ontario. I mean, the weather changed so dramatically within a matter of hours. The forest fire was like about ready to take over the town.
And so before the last question, before we do the transfer to Ontario, were you able to rescue everybody, or what was the situation in northern Manitoba as far as the rescues, and what was the damage like?
So I can't necessarily speak to the damage, and I think that's a bit of a good thing. I know that some of the residents have gone back into Puckett to Wagon. We are also doing evacuations out of Norway House and Cross Lake. But overall, I think we were able to get out about 4,000 people out of those. Yeah, it's. I'm being told now that it was the largest domestic air evacuation utilizing the largest air task force in Canadian history. One of the links that I've given to you here from the Premier of Manitoba, like he provides that thank you to all the Canadian Forces members for exactly just that. I mean, it was just incredible to see how fast, like from Comox, British Columbia to Gagetown, New Brunswick, we, the Canadian Forces, were able to come together in support of this. Like, I have goosebumps. Ugh. Goosebumps just thinking about it.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Incredible.
And is it humbling to be the person in charge of that?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Like, I don't know how to take it. I mean, this is my first ever being inside of a radio broadcast talking about this. But to be able to get this story out to Canadians and to thank them for their support, I mean, it means so much to me. And to be able to see so many people now that are able to continue to live their lives and knowing that we played a part in all of that, it's humbling, as you said. Very humbling.
We're going to transfer over to the firefight in Ontario. We're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Craig Greeley, who was in charge of the Air Task Force Command for Operation Lentus, which was the wildfires in northern Manitoba and northern Ontario. Northern Ontario, was it similar the way the fire started there?
Absolutely, very similar. The nuance here was, as I was mentioning earlier, the weather. Initially, I think the forest fire was about 14 kilometers away from the town. Within a matter of an afternoon, it got down to about 7 kilometers. And the town, the province really feared, because again, it's one of these other isolated communities that the only way to get in or out, ice roads or airplane. So they became really fearful, staffed up this RFA, this request for federal assistance, and then we go back in.
Yeah.
But flash to bang, I mean, from a story perspective, I had been home for about 48 hours. I got home on a Thursday night, and Saturday afternoon, I'm getting calls again, you know, talking about this. And I was, again, like, I'm all for it. And my chief, yet again, I love the guy. You know, he's got my back, and he's right with me to go on up again to Winnipeg in support of this, another evacuation.
So you go in, tell us about the community there, and was there a lot of similarities in the evacuation, or was it a completely different fight?
It was different in terms of the logistics plan that we had to go through. The nuance here is that we staged out of Manitoba. That's where we brought all of our air assets in. We had four fixed wing, two Legacy C-130, two C-130Js, a Griffin helicopter, and a Cormorant helicopter, so six in total. We all staged out of Winnipeg, but then we had about an hour transit into this place, Sandy Lake, in northern Ontario, and then to bring those people down to Thunder Bay. Unique in that we were not able to bring them across into Manitoba, crossing provincial boundaries in that sort of scenario. So we had to keep the people sort of within Ontario. So if you will, Winnipeg, Sandy Lake, down to Thunder Bay, Sandy Lake, Thunder Bay, back and forth.
You couldn't bring them across.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more of a reason and story behind it, but right. There was a complication, if you will, at a intergovernmental level,
right.
That we weren't able to bring them across and do Manitoba. But that's a whole nother thing, I suppose.
Well, I'll talk to you off air about that part.
Roger that.
So, how far away is the flight from Thunder Bay to Sandy Lake?
I think it was about an hour and a half.
So you get into this community. Is it similar size to Puckett-O-Wagon, where it's a couple thousand people?
Yeah, it's about 2,000 to 3,000 people. Those were the indications that we had when we initially went in. We were able to evacuate about 1,500 people before the city, the town, the community turned off this request for federal assistance and said, "We've got out everyone that wants to go."
So, were you shared any reasons why people would A, want to stay, or was the threat eliminated at that point?
I don't think the threat was eliminated, but the fire got as close as 6.5 kilometers before the town felt as though the town, as well as the province, were able to keep the fire sort of at bay. And those people that wanted to stay, whether they just wanted to help protect their homes, the community, look after pets was another one of the big things that made the news.
What's the interaction that you have with these community members, and what are the conversations like?
It's interesting. From my, even over the 2 weeks I was doing this, I didn't talk to the provinces once, because I've got other staff members that were doing that sort of on my behalf and feeding that information back. Thank God. The biggest thank you. The biggest success was actually having people boots on ground and in Puckett-O-Wagon, in Norway House, in Sandy Lake, where they were able to do that level of communication, talk to the people who wants to go, who wants to stay, tell them these are the flights, this is the schedule for the day, this is when you can expect the aircraft to land, and making sure that people are available to get on and come out.
When did you get back to Trenton?
I don't have the date off the top of my head, but I'm going to say it's somewhere around the 12th of June. So it was about 2 weeks in total that I happened to be gone.
And so when you come back, is it kind of like walking out of a fog? Like
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when I first went up there, you know, I'm working 22, 23, 24 hour days. You know, I'm putting my head on the pillow just long enough to say that I did it before doing it all over again. But once I get back here, I'm back in as being the commanding officer for 8 Air Maintenance Squadron. Right, and just time to slow things down and get back into the normal battle rhythm.
Well, and it must be a challenge too, because things here don't stop because you're doing an exercise like that.
100%.
So is that where you really rely on colleagues here and your subordinates to
absolutely
help pick up the slack?
And that's it. You know, I think we're really good at that across the Canadian Armed Forces, and recognizing that when people like myself, my chief, need to step away, like I've got great people below me that were able to come up into those particular roles to support the squad, support the wing, and all that they need to do. But like you said, while we were doing Operation Lentus, we also had Operation Cadence for support for the G7 that was going on as well, and the various assets that were out there supporting that. So, you know, I'm just one small operation, very important one, to something else that's going on as well.
Did Trenton have any role with the G7?
Absolutely, yeah. If I'm not mistaken, we had another two of our C-130Js that are out supporting that as well.
Yeah, there's... And what I love about it is it's everyday human beings you're helping and world leaders you're helping keep safe at the same time. And so it must be like trying to hit a moving dartboard at times, because you guys are being brought up to speed or not fully educated, but being, you know, some of these things you may not know about nuances or blueprints.
Yeah,
or
that's it. Yeah.
The plans. What do you think of the position you're in right now, and what is kind of the dream as far as the next steps in your career, or is this the sweet spot that you love being in?
The unfortunate aspect is at a point in time when I leave 8-Air Maintenance Squadron, it'll be probably my last time working in a squadron for the rest of my career, for however long I continue to serve. And that's just the nature of the role that I as an area officer have to play in the organization. I'd love to be able to come back as the commander of 8 Wing one day if we're able to... sort of change the winds, but typically it's a pilot that, or, you know, operator that fills those particular roles. But right. Yeah, at a point down the road, I know I'll be going back to Winnipeg and to various staff roles out there, or Ottawa, but it's looking forward to it.
Well, what interests me is, and I'm just going to go back, and do we have, five minutes? Okay. So you start out, you can tell you're from the East Coast because you're a nice guy. The East Coast people are the best people on the planet.
No accent coming out too much.
Haven't heard a bit of it. Then you train for the Olympics. You become an aerospace engineer. You're in charge of a military squadron, and you go and you rescue people in the middle of fires. You're Batman.
I'm not sure about Batman. But...
Well, then the Dasakis guy.
Darn.
The most interesting man on the face of the planet. You had mentioned the squadron type. What are the roles in career advancement? Because there's officers and non-officers in the military.
Yeah, non-commissioned members.
And you're a lieutenant colonel. What are the ranks above that? Is it different levels of colonel and different levels, like general, brigadier, general?
Whatever, you've got it right. Yeah. So above me, colonel, like our Colonel Andy Bowser here at 8 Wing.
Right.
Then above that, the four different, you know, stars, but really they're leaves, if you will, of generals, brigadier, major, lieutenant, and full general.
So, because I know Ryan Deming, who was...
Brigadier General Deming, yes.
Yeah. What I've heard
you know
from...
Everybody.
No, nobody wants to pass the information my way, but you got to find it out one way or another. So, a lot of the people that have served, that have come here, there's some of them that have kind of stayed in this area. What are your thoughts on the Quinte region? Because, I mean, obviously you're no stranger to water, but yeah. What do you think of Trenton?
You know what? As I said, like, this is my first time living here. I live just north of the Walmart here in Belleville. Love it.
Yeah.
It is so, it's quiet. I love the community aspect of things. It's a short drive to work, just taking the 401 there in Trenton. But being at the home, the heart of air mobility, I mean, that's for me, it's just incredible. I go outside, often outside of my hangar a few times a day, just to take a look and see what's flying around. What are the operations we're doing?
Were you here for the air show last year?
No, I wasn't. I was here just a couple of days after it. I heard about the weather, though.
Yeah, the first day was about an inch of rain, but it is really, really cool to see the planes that we have. And I found it. I was in the car the other day with my wife, and we were running a news story about the flybys for Canada Day. And I said to my wife, and it wasn't meant disrespectfully, but I said, we get those every day. That's called TNG Thursdays?
Yeah.
You know, you have these planes, and we have, you know, they go over Mountain View, and so people in the county see them, and they land from Ottawa coming into Belleville. Yeah. And if you're in Bayside or Trenton or Brighton, you see them every single day.
Yeah.
We're pretty spoiled here to have that, and the base is just blowing up over the next 2 years, I hear,
it is.
Too.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, with the new air-to-refueler that we're getting, the Airbus A330s, new hangar is going to be built here imminently, just north of where I'm hanging out in my office. New facilities going in over there. We've got fixed-wing search and rescue assets that will be coming in here to replace We've got the Jays doing a degree of search and rescue right now, but then they're coming in. Yeah, it's incredible to see the growth here over the next couple of years.
So the 330s, that's the Husky fleet.
You got it.
And those planes are taking over the Airbuses or the Polaris's?
Yeah.
And so I've seen I always see I know the white plane and the gray Polaris's are the same, but that white plane has been kind of stationed, hasn't moved in a couple of weeks. When are we getting that, the Prime Minister's new plane here? Is that, because that's in Ottawa?
It is in Ottawa. It has been down here on one or two occasions.
Yeah. Because it's quite a bit bigger.
Yeah, it's bigger than the 150s, absolutely. Yeah. It's in terms of the hangar space, we don't have a hangar currently in Trenton.
You can't fold the wings up on
No,
doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way, yeah.
This was awesome.
Hi, buddy. I love it.
The hour flew past, and I really appreciate it. Lieutenant Colonel Craig Greeley, the commanding officer for 8 AMS, and was in charge of Operation Lentus. Thanks for being a hero, man.
Hey, thanks. I really appreciate it, my friend. Thanks to everyone that supported me as well.